Blood and Barrels discuss cases that contain graphic content.
And Mike has a potty mouth.
So does Amy.
Nah.
Listener discretion is advised. What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Blood and Barrels. I'm Mike.
I'm Amy.
And I'm pretty freaking worn out. I'm pretty freaking worn out today, yeah. I'm freaking worn out.
Where are you from today?
Apparently not Texas. I don't know. That was definitely not, yeah, that's not a Texas word.
Is that even a word?
I think that's a I'm so tired word that just slipped out, for sure. yeah, it's sad, you know, you get caught in this kind of sedentary routine, you know, we both sit in desks all day. And so, yes. You know, so we got out and, there's a town near us called Little Elm, and they have a really, actually it was really cool. It was a little beach, on the lake. So it was like ocean style beach, but on the lake. So we took kids out there, went out with some friends and I had an awesome time. But God, you know, you get out in the sun, it starts hitting 100 degrees outside and you're in the sun and you're moving and you're used to sitting in your chair in the cold. And yeah, it just wore me the fuck out.
That's because you're old.
I can't really argue with that anymore. Today I feel old. Normally I don't, but today I feel very old. Yes.
Well, there you have it.
I mean, how did you fare with the sun and everything?
I'm wonderful.
There you go. I don't know. You're looking a little like tired and
shut your face,
glazy eyed from
you. Shut your pie hole.
Yeah. So before we pressed record, we're like, we got to share a monster. Like we're both over here yawning. It was bad. So anyway, we hope you're all doing well. We actually, it was the episode before this, but we already recorded the one before this. We did the live episode in Pensacola, so yeah. Hopefully that went well. I think for the people there, it went well. I don't know that the recording quality was great. We're going to have to figure something out there, but we'll get it worked out eventually. So
it was fun.
We had a blast. I loved it. Emerald Republic is, every time we've gone, they've just been awesome people. The beer is great. The atmosphere is awesome. So, and of course, the people of Pensacola have been very welcoming and warm. Yes. When we were there. And we have a good time. So, yeah, it was a really good show. I enjoyed it.
Yes, we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But we are not in Pensacola this week.
Where are we going this week, boo?
Oh, we're going to our home state.
Tejas?
We are.
Tejas? Yeah. Where in Tejas?
We are going to Fredericksburg.
We went to Fredericksburg, didn't we?
No.
Where was it? I'm thinking of Jefferson. That's what that is.
Yeah, totally different.
I've heard of Fredericksburg. I've seen pictures. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever actually been there, though. But I've heard good things,
I've been to Fredericksburg.
It's supposed to be like a nice, like, fun, touristy thing to do. They've got a bunch of stuff there, right?
I mean, Lady Bird's Ranch is there. And wineries.
What is Lady Bird's Ranch?
President Lyndon Johnson's wife was Lady Bird Johnson. Was Lady Bird Johnson?
You're so funny. yes, so, okay. So she was from here.
Yeah, she was so from was here. He.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's why we have LBJ Freeway.
Yeah.
I'm slow. Well, and then we have the President George Bush Tollway.
Yes.
And then
the George W. Library.
We got Roosevelt State Park.
Eisenhower
State. I can't get my shit straight today. We're just going to have to start all over. Just scrap it all. We're starting over, people.
No, we don't have time for that.
Yeah, no shit. we're babysitting tonight.
Yeah, we don't have time for all that shit. Let's go.
We made a trade-off. We've got somebody watching our kids so we could record, and then we're going to watch their kids so that they can go out on a date. I feel like that's fair.
We can just say it's Angie. They all have heard us.
Oh, yeah, it's Angie. What up, Angie? Yeah. So anyway, well, cool. We're going to Fredericksburg, Texas. Excellent. What are we drinking?
Wine.
Dude, we haven't had wine in a long time. At least it feels like it's been a minute.
Yes. Let me tell you when the last episode we had wine was.
Oh, you're going to go dig it up, huh?
It doesn't take that long.
Fair enough.
Episode 36 was the last time we had wine.
Man, you were on that quick. I was like, holy, you're like episode 36, episode 36.
Yep.
Man, you were just, I'm impressed.
I know things.
You're so quick. It's ridiculous. It's truly, truly ridiculous. Mad props to you.
You're truly ridiculous.
I am truly ridiculous. Yes, I cannot argue with that at all. Cool. All right. So we're going to Fredericksburg. We're drinking wine. And the wine that we are drinking today is by Slate Mill Wine Collective. And that's Fredericksburg.
Yes, in the Hill Country, which is, I think they say it's like second to Napa now.
Yeah, I've heard that, which I always felt was kind of weird. I don't think of Texas as like a big, you know, grape and wine producer, but like we've got some wineries around here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've heard you can go down and like do the Hill Country wine tours and all that. Yeah, it's supposed to be a lot of fun. Yeah,
it's supposed to be pretty cool.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to sneak off and do that one weekend. We can take the kayaks. We can drink wine and kayak. No, she's making, I don't know, she's thinking.
I was trying to envision how that would work.
Well, we just roll up into the winery and just slap that kayak on the floor, order a glass, and just start rowing our shit through there. We have come to paddle the rivers of your winery. I'm stupid. Okay. So, enough of that nonsense. Let's pop it open.
Yes, let's.
So we're going to start this off with the 2019 Reedy Vineyards Viognier. So I'm looking forward to this one. We really enjoyed the last Viognier we had. And before we get into it, I did want to give you a little bit about this wine. So it says this white wine was partially aged in French oak barrels and is fuller bodied. The Viognier grape thrives in the Texas terroir and is known for its intense bouquet of jasmine and honeysuckle. Entirely sourced from the Reedy Vineyards in the Texas High Plains AVA, our oaked Viognier boosts an enticing bouquet of pineapple, vanilla, and almond oil. The complex flavor profile also balances white peach, lemon curd, and tropical fruit with a bright acidity and rich, creamy mouthfeel. There's that word, mouthfeel. The long finish is both thought-provoking and refreshing. So this sounds really good. I'm excited to try it. You ready?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it. Whoa.
That was a big pop.
Deaf now. Mm-hmm.
All right, you ready? She was looking at me. I was smelling the wines. I was taking in the aromas, and she was like, I'm ready to drink this bitch. Like, get your shit together. All right. Cheers.
Cheers. Still like it.
Yeah. I love a Viognier. This is really good. I like that a lot.
The last time we did a Viognier, we had to look up how to pronounce it.
I know. Yeah. Cause we never had one, but no, this is really, really good. I love this.
This is very good.
All right, so we've got our location, we've got our wine. What's our case today, boo?
We are talking about the murders of Joe and Amanda Alvarado.
Nice. And we should never swim before we record ever again. So I feel like this is like the most awkward sounding. We're definitely gonna have to drink more wine, but everybody's probably like, man, they're being weird today. Okay. So, sorry. Who are we doing again?
The murders of Joe and Amanda Alvarado.
Perfect. All right. Well, I'm ready to jump in if you are.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
So, Joe and Amanda lived in Fredericksburg, obviously. So, Fredericksburg is about 75 miles west of Austin. So, it's kind of right there.
I had to do, like, the never eat soggy waffles, like... I was like, West. Yeah.
West of Austin.
Yep, yep. That in the hill country, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's considered to be a pretty safe and kind of peaceful area. But on September 8th, 1992, Joe and Amanda were murdered by their estranged son-in-law, Scott Lewis Panetti.
Panetti.
Yes. And he was not a native Texan. I'm just going to throw that out there. He was born in Wisconsin and had actually worked as a ranch hand at some point in his life. And I'm actually really kind of surprised that you and I have never heard of, well, I'm assuming you've never heard of this guy.
As far as I know, I've never heard of this case.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a really, really well-known case in Texas because from the very beginning of his trial, the case has been one that has focused on mental illness and whether or not it's okay to execute prisoners that have a long-standing history.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question, right? I mean, obviously, you want to punish the crime, but I guess you need to look at that factor, too. I don't know.
So, and this case would make the argument that maybe you shouldn't execute. And we'll get into the details, but from the research I did, so the murders happened in September of 1992. So that was a long time ago.
92, yeah.
Yeah.
That was back in the day.
I was in fifth grade.
Oh, man. Would that make me third grade?
Yeah.
Damn. So that was definitely back in the day.
Yeah. And they normally say that for somebody who's on death row, it usually takes about 11 years before they're executed.
Yeah.
Well, he had an execution date of 2004. It was stayed. He got another one of 2014.
Oh, wow. That's a big stay.
It was stayed again. He is still on death row as of like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. This must be that must be controversial because in Texas, if you kill somebody, we kill you back. And and you don't get a lot of stays here. So, yeah, well, that's interesting.
If I remember correctly, like the Supreme Court.
Oh, it went up in, that yeah, hot, really? Stepped in and okay, stayed. So it wasn't like the governor or anything.
No, it was. And we'll get into why it's such an argument and why he hasn't been executed. Okay.
No, yeah.
So Scott had been hospitalized for his mental illness at least a dozen times prior to the murder of his in-laws. He had also been diagnosed with both schizophrenia and schizoaffective.
Oh, yeah, that's a pretty rough combination, yeah.
Well, and so I looked up exactly what schizoaffective is, and it said that it's a combination of schizophrenia and manic depression, so I don't know how you would
be both,
but it's so maybe different doctors diagnosed him as one, and
that's entirely possible. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so his first hospitalization happened when he was a teenager in 1981, and that was a involuntary hospitalization. So, like I said, he'd been hospitalized off and on throughout his life. Some of them were voluntary, some of them were involuntary, but 1986 was a pretty bad year for him. It's pretty well known that he had a complete breakdown and he was actually trying to wash the devil from his house.
Oh, how does one wash? Like, he was scrubbing the walls with like soap and shit?
He was washing the walls. He was also burying the family furniture in the backyard.
Burying the furniture?
Correct.
So the devil was in the furniture.
He also nailed the curtains in the house shut because he didn't want the neighbors looking in on him as well.
Dude, I get that. Sometimes you got those nosy neighbors and they be getting all up in your shit. Maybe I should nail my fucking curtains shut.
They don't have any curtains.
That's a valid point. We have those little shitty like sheer things.
Oh, that
suck ass. We need to buy some curtains. Just saying.
You were very manly about that. We need to buy some curtains. We need to buy
some curtains. And you know, because curtain shopping is a real manly thing to do.
Right. It was just the way you said it.
Yeah.
So, also in 1986, he was hospitalized 9 times alone.
Wow. 9 times in 1 year.
Yeah. So anyway, it was also known that he did have substance abuse problems on top of that, both with alcohol and drugs.
Yeah. And what's sad is it's not an uncommon thing for that to happen. And I think because a lot of times if you're either improperly medicated or not medicated at all, people will seek out something to try to make themselves feel normal or to take, I'm trying to describe it well, but basically to...
They're self-medicating.
They're self-medicating, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I can't talk today, apparently.
So Scott was married to Joe and Amanda's daughter, Sonia. Sonia was Scott's second wife. They had been married about like 4 years. They had a little girl together, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But 2 years prior to the murder, so in 1990, Scott was hospitalized again. This time he was in Kerrville, Texas, and he was hospitalized for threatening not only his father-in-law, but himself, his wife, and his daughter. The records go on to say that Scott had actually believed that the residents of Fredericksburg were out to get him, and that's why he threatened his family.
Yeah, and I mean, in those cases, you know, you have to take those threats seriously. I mean, and I'm not, that's not me going, you know, speaking ill of people with mental health issues. I have mental health issues, and we've talked about it on the show multiple times, but when somebody is in that state, you don't really know how they're going to react. And it's not saying that they're necessarily naturally a violent person, but when they're in that state, they can be somewhat unpredictable.
Exactly. So they did. They obviously took it seriously and tried to get him some help. It's also well known that Scott also believed that he was the center of a war between God and the devil.
I mean, religious ideation and things like that are also not uncommon with people with schizophrenia. It happens quite frequently.
So at the time of his in-laws' murders in 1992, Scott and Sonia were separated. And this was, at this point, they'd been married about 4 years, but they were separated. Their daughter at this point was three. And according to Sonia, the couple had separated because of Scott's drinking problems and because he was abusive. Sonia took their daughter to go live with her parents, Joe and Amanda. And at this time, she had also filed a restraining order against Scott. In the weeks prior to the murders, the police had been called out on domestic calls between Scott and Sonia multiple times, but there was never anything big enough for them to make an arrest in those calls. So they didn't, I don't think anybody expected it to go to the extreme that it does. On the morning of the murders, Scott shaved his head. He then dressed in fatigues, got a sawed-off shotgun, and armed himself with knives. He went to his in-law's house and entered through the back door. He actually got there before sunrise.
I just want to point out that in the woods, dressing in fatigues is camouflage. When you're in a neighborhood, I'm just saying, it's not camouflage. You're actually making yourself stand out more.
But remember, he got there before sunrise, so it's dark.
I mean, that's fair. Black would have probably been better, but I'm just saying.
So, yeah, he entered his in-law's home through the back door, shot Amanda and Joe at close range, but did not shoot Sonia or his daughter, whose name was Amanda, as well.
I mean, I can at least say thank God for that. The smaller the body count, the better, but it still is horrific that he shot Joe and Amanda, you know?
Yes, and just a little side note, his daughter's nickname was Birdie. I thought that was cute.
Sadly, isn't that where Lady Bird's thing is? Is there a connection there?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
But I was just curious because I remember you saying that earlier. So
I didn't make that connection myself. So sadly, this is another one of those cases where we're not going to have a lot of information on the victims because it's such a controversial case for the death penalty.
Yeah, all of the information's about him and
yeah. But what I could find out about Joe and Amanda was that Joe was known as a man who was always willing to help out, and he had worked as a stonemason in his life. But at this time, he was the caretaker for his wife, Amanda, who was on dialysis.
Oh, so she's ill and on dialysis, and he killed her? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she was, like, not even probably able to, like, get up and, like, defend herself that, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, he let, he didn't harm, his daughter, Amanda, not to be confused with his mother-in-law, Amanda.
I mean, we name our, we have a tendency to name our kids after family members, not everybody, but yeah, I mean, it's a thing.
Yes. When the police finally did see Sonia, she did have a black eye and a bruise on her temple. So they, I'm assuming they bring that up because he hit her for some reason.
I'm surprised she didn't beat the fuck out of him. He rolled up in there with a shotgun, killing her parents. Well, I'm surprised she didn't beat the fuck out of him.
Well, he took Sonia and Amanda just west of town to his hunting cabin.
So he kidnapped them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he only kept them there until about 7:30 in the morning.
Okay.
He finally let them leave, but he stayed in the cabin for like 9 hours while the police were trying to, you know, get him. He was like,
hold
up or yeah, whatever the word is.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, and I can't think of it either. But yeah, he had, they were just talking about it in the Uvalde case, the term that you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I can't.
When they've quarantined themselves in,
yeah,
you have to talk them out, yeah.
And eventually, it kind of sounds like they may have, like, given up because
the cops?
Yes. So
they're like, fuck it, he'll never come out. Let's get out of here.
I don't really know. That's the problem, is like some sources say they kept him searching for, maybe they didn't know where he was.
Oh, okay.
And he stayed in that cabin for 9 hours. And then he changed out of the fatigues and into a suit and walked into the police department and turned himself in.
Really?
Yeah.
So essentially what it comes down to is the police didn't find him.
Right.
And
they didn't know where he was.
It's interesting that he changed out of the fatigues and into the suit.
Yeah.
But like, why change?
I don't know, but he changed his clothes and turned himself in.
I mean, I'm glad he turned himself in without incident. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
For everybody involved, but, you know, still.
So when he did finally turn himself in, Scott claimed that someone named Sarge had commanded that he commit the murders.
That explains the fatigues.
And this obviously was determined to have been an auditory hallucination.
Yeah.
But he believed that Sarge had commanded that he kill his in-laws. He also said that the divine had intervened during the murders, leading him to believe that the victims died without suffering, and went on to say that as he was leaving the scene, the demons were laughing at him.
Yeah, I really don't know what to say about all that, because it is tricky. I mean, he's at least schizophrenic, if not schizoaffective, or both. I'm not exactly sure how that all works out, but I mean, it's well known that they suffer from hallucinations that. And yeah, the things that yeah. So I mean, that's tough. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So the murders happened in late 1992. Like we said, in July of 1994, there was a hearing held to determine Scott's mental ability to stand trial. The jury actually couldn't reach a verdict on that, so they had to set a second hearing to be held in September just to determine if he could stand trial. During the September trial, Scott's lawyer said he had little to no contact with Scott since the murders had occurred because of Scott's delusional thinking. The communication that he did have, he claimed to be useless because he couldn't, like, reasonably discuss things with him.
Well, and that's almost like a two-pronged argument, which is not only is he not able to stand trial, but I can't effectively counsel him.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because of this, the defense hired a psychiatrist who determined that Scott was not fit to stand trial. So, of course, prosecution hires their own psychiatrist who agreed with the defense's diagnosis. And the doctor said that his mental state could interfere with Scott's communication with his lawyer. However, this doctor believed that despite all of this, Scott was fine to stand trial.
See, that kind of pisses me off because, let's be honest, when it comes to expert witnesses, their testimony is bought and paid for.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
It's a fact. All of those expert witnesses charge a fee.
Yep.
And they'll tell you, or what they'll do, I won't accuse them specifically of, although I kind of feel this way, that they are just saying what the prosecution wants them to.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel that way, but I'm not going to say that that's the fact. But if nothing else, the prosecution's obviously going to hire people they know mm-hmm. are going to lean a certain way ahead of time. That's probably a more non-accusatory way to say it, because I certainly don't want to get sued. This is a guy who's obviously very, very sick, and
yeah,
even and they're basically, and well, and there's another part to this, which is that in some cases, what they'll do is, okay, yes, they're not fit to stand trial, but let's pump them full of a bunch of drugs against their will.
So that they are
yeah. prepared to stand trial. So then you're forcing them to take medication.
Yeah.
And I have mixed feelings about that. I don't know. It's a lot. You knew I was going to go off on this case. Sorry.
I did.
I'm trying not to go off too much, but yeah, go ahead.
So the jury actually agreed with the prosecution's doctor. So
that's, you know, what's sad is I think that's partially because there's a lot of stigma to it. We're talking about what year was this?
'94 now.
Yeah, '94. Nobody understood like bipolar or schizophrenia. Yeah. What people did know about it was from like movies, and they're like, these people are psychos. Like,
yeah.
It was very stigmatized.
So after it was determined that Scott was going to go on trial, he waived his right to counsel.
Oh, no.
But despite that, the trial was set to go forward a year later in September.
Wait, so they let him wait? They actually allowed him to waive his right to counsel?
Yep. And they let him represent himself.
No, if you know he's that far off, how could you even allow? How could the judge allow that?
Well, and it's funny that you say that because I have a quote somewhere down here that we'll get to, but okay. Basically somebody says that exact same thing.
Well, like, it's fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, fine. If you're going to make him, and I'm not saying he shouldn't stand trial, but I mean, however they went that route to make that happen, they knew he was sick.
Yeah.
They should have never allowed him to do that because he's not, even if he's mentally fit to stand trial, he's not mentally fit to represent his own self. Yeah. His own damn self.
So he had actually fired his lawyers because he believed that his lawyers were a part of the conspiracy against him.
With the devil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the lawyers, though, were not the only ones involved in the conspiracy against him. So was the local sheriff. He started actually calling himself a born-again April Fool and stopped taking his meds.
Oh, so he's gone from bad to worse. Yeah. So he was actually medicated when all this happened. So,
yeah.
Oh, fuck.
He claimed to have stopped taking them because he was a Gnostic Nazarene who was born again and didn't need them.
There's a lot to unpackage there. Yes. A Gnostic, which means I don't believe. Isn't that like I don't believe in anything kind of thing?
No, that's agnostic.
This is, so Gnostic would be the opposite of that.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's the Gnostic books of the Bible or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That. Okay, and then Nazarene being like somebody from Nazareth?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there's a lot there. Okay.
But because of this, he didn't need his meds. When it came time for trial, Scott came to court dressed as a cowboy.
I love it.
Not only did he come to court in a purple cowboy outfit.
Yes.
Complete with the cowboy hat. But he also tucked his pants into cowboy boots and wore a cowboy shirt, whatever that
is. He didn't have like the tassel-y jacket.
I don't know. That I couldn't find so a picture dope. Of it.
There's got to be pictures somewhere. We must find them.
So,
and that's not even like make fun, but it's like, again, like who was stupid enough to let this man represent himself? Like he obviously needed counsel to guide him through A, not wearing a fucking purple cowboy suit to court to make himself look even crazier. Like, although I guess that could be a tactic, right? Like, make him look even more crazy so it plays. I don't know.
Well, he did have over 200 witnesses to call to the stand.
200 witnesses. That's epic.
Many of these witnesses were famous actors and actresses.
So nobody he actually knew and none of them actually showed up.
As well as deceased people.
Who obviously didn't show up.
Including JFK.
And they're still, yes. Still
he also,
letting him represent himself.
He also wanted to call the Pope and Jesus.
Who the fuck was the judge presiding over this case? I would very much like to know, because I am furious right now. Like, part of it is like, haha, funny, but it's not. I mean, it's not. But you get what I'm saying, yeah. Right? But who? Oh my God! I mean, I know it was the '90s, but that excuse only goes so far. What the fuck?
I mean, there people who were actually called as witnesses and did show up. I'm assuming for the prosecution, they described the trial many different ways: a farce, a joke, a mockery, a circus. Like all of them were like, "What are y'all doing? Letting this man?" Because he just basically
So every witness that showed up for the prosecution was sitting there going, what the fuck are y'all doing?
In statements post-trial, these witnesses stated that they did not think that Scott was competent to stand trial. They also said it seemed that the judge just let Scott run wild. Scott asked whatever questions he wanted, whether they made sense or not.
It doesn't sound like the judge was competent to be a fucking judge.
A doctor that had previously treated Scott had been called as a witness, and he was quoted as later saying, I thought to myself, my God, how in the world can our legal system allow an insane man to defend himself? How can this be just?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Which, to me, already justifies the stays and everything mm-hmm. and why he hasn't been executed. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he did was absolutely wrong and he should pay for that. But again, this is a very sick man. There are places where you can send people to get them better and still have them serve time, right? There are like prison hospitals mm-hmm. for people like this. Like, fine, send him to jail, but get him some fucking help.
I agree. Another doctor who had previously treated Scott said that Scott was playing the part of a lawyer not to defend himself, but because that's what the schizophrenia told him to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
He did have a, what they call, standby lawyer.
So, like, somebody who would, like, play second chair to him if he needed assistance. And, I mean, I think that can be kind of common. I don't know how common practice that is, but it makes sense, right? So, somebody there to assist him in defending himself. Somebody who knows the legal system a little bit better.
So, and this standby lawyer believed that what the previous doctor said about him being a lawyer because the schizophrenia told him to do it. The standby lawyer says that this should have been enough. That should have been enough evidence to potentially reduce the charge.
Oh, did he say that on the stand or did he say it later?
Later, I believe. Scott, again, keeps going on with his circus, I guess, for lack of a better word. And apparently he had some evidence that would have helped his case, but he didn't present it, obviously, because he's not a lawyer. He doesn't know what he's doing.
No, and again, he's just playing the part.
Mm-hmm.
God, I mean, it makes me so mad. I do not usually get this mad, but I'm fucking pissed.
So Scott's standby lawyer also says he should have never been allowed to represent himself. His own father described all of his behavior as just really bizarre. But at the end of his trial, the jury sentenced him to death. Scott's ex-wife, Sonia, the daughter of the victims, was quoted in 1999, so years later. She described the trial as a circus. And she said that now looking back, she really understood that Scott was a lot more mentally ill than she thought he was, and that he shouldn't be sentenced to death. The daughter of the victims said that.
Right.
Well, we'll get to the other daughter of the victims here in a minute. She has a whole different...
Well, okay, right. But this is the daughter of the victim that was also... Married to him. Yeah, they're married. They've got a kid together. So, I mean, there's also probably some feelings there.
But she had also left him, had a restraining order on him.
Sure, but he's still the father of her children. Like, there's still...
There is.
She loved him at one point. There's feelings there. So I want to know what the other daughter had to say. That's what I'm curious about.
Well, I think.
She's probably like, fuck that motherfucker.
We'll get
there. She's like, shut up, Mike. We're going to get there in a minute.
My point in bringing Sonia up is that, yeah, she was feelings there, but don't forget he kidnapped her and their daughter right after killing her parents. So yeah, I'm sure there's feelings, but she was just as much a part of that event, whereas I don't think the other daughter that we're going to talk about was there. I'm not saying it didn't affect the other daughter the same.
Well, it didn't, because you make a valid point. She and her daughter were actual victims in the events that took place. They were actually physically there. They probably saw the murderers, or at least
saw the dead bodies. She saw her parents shot right in front of her.
Yeah, that's fucking traumatic. So yeah, her sister, not even close, unless she was in the fucking house, which I'm assuming she wasn't.
I don't think she was. Yeah. The only thing I ever saw was that Sonia was.
Right. And again, I'm not trying to downplay. I mean, losing a family member to a violent crime, I'm not trying to downplay that. And whatever her feelings are, she's justified in. But you're right. It's not the same at all.
Well, and so I think the fact that Sonia is now taking a step back and is able to see, okay, it was more than just drinking. It was more like there was, maybe he really was mentally ill, I think that's what I'm trying to point out.
Yeah.
So in 2006, Scott is interviewed. And he still, so now in 2006, he's 48 years old. But he's claiming that as a child, he was both drowned and electrocuted. He also claimed that a fellow inmate had stabbed him in the eye, but that JFK had healed him of that wound. He was being housed in a jail in East Texas and claimed that the devil was trying to stop his preaching.
I actually believe that JFK could probably put your eyes back on. What? JFK was dope. I'm just saying.
So in 2007 is when the Supreme Court blocked the execution of Scott.
I'm interrupting again, and I apologize, but so did he go through the appeals process?
I am not real sure, to be real honest. I don't know how he got stayed so many times. But in 2007, the Supreme Court actually blocked it. And there is a big, like, you can go read the Supreme Court's writings about it because it's such a big deal.
I actually might. If I do, we may do a follow-up on this because this one is probably, like, this one hits a little close to home for me. So I might actually do this, and we might actually do a follow-up on this one.
Yeah, it's a big...
Yeah, and I fucking hate legal jargon, but I'll fucking read it.
So they, in 2007, the Supreme Court blocked the execution. And we're going to point out that there are lots of mentally ill criminals on death row in Texas.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah. Scott's case became the Supreme Court way of questioning Texas's standards for determining if a person is capable of standing trial.
Well, I absolutely think that a state Supreme Court should hold a state accountable for certain things, but it's not just Texas.
No, this is the Supreme Court of the United States is questioning Texas's.
Missed that. Yeah. Well, I will say, okay, I still agree. I don't think that it's just Texas. We're not the only state.
No.
But I absolutely think it should be questioned.
But we have this specific case that the man obviously shouldn't have been allowed to do what he did.
Yeah. Well, and again, I'm gonna go off on this one for a minute because let's be honest. If we made mental health a little bit more of a priority, I'm not saying we have to sink billions of dollars into it, but if we just recognize things and give people the resources that they need. And I will say, here in Texas, we do have a program. I took advantage of it for a while. If you have no health insurance, mm-hmm. there are like counseling services and they have psychologists and psychiatrists you can go to. You have to look it up. I don't remember what it's called, but it does exist. So you can get absolutely. They actually have a third-party insurance company. You fill out a couple forms. They give you the insurance for nothing. You don't pay for it. It's given to you. They cover fucking everything, pretty much. I don't know that I really... I mean, if I did pay anything, it was maybe like $15 a visit, like, which is accessible for most anybody. Like, I'm not saying that Texas fails 100%, but there's more that could be done. And I think there's got to be a recognition somewhere across the board that if we can help people from the get-go, we might save other people's lives and save these people's lives too. Like, people with mental illness also need to be saved and have good lives because they're dying inside too. Man, I just went off on a real fucking rant. Sorry, y'all.
Comedy?
I know. I'm sorry. As a person who suffers from it, like, there's been times like it kills me sometimes. So we need to help people. But anyway, I'm shut up now. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I went off on a real, sorry, y'all.
So, he was given the next execution date to be in 2014. And the execution was stayed again. Now, I will say, Sonia had two other sisters, Rowena and Minnie. And one of them, I want to say it was Rowena. I don't remember. But they were driving to the prison to witness the execution. And they were about 100 miles outside of San Antonio where they left from. And the lawyer called and said, the execution's being stayed. Like, it was that last minute.
Wow.
So they had to like just turn around and go back home. So I can understand from her perspective. At this point, it's, you know, 2014. Her parents were killed in 1992.
And you're right. The families deserve justice. It's hard.
She just, when they interviewed her, she was the first one to really have ever spoken out. And she said, she didn't say much, but what she did say is that her family was all very close and that they were even close to Scott, and that she said she never saw any signs of mental illness in Scott.
Well, okay, but this is, so sorry, just so I'm completely on board. This is the sister of the victim.
Yes.
Right. So it's essentially...
Well, which victim?
There's only two dead people, right?
So it's one of their daughters.
Oh, this is one of their other daughters.
Yeah, one of their other daughters.
Okay, so the two people who are murdered, it's one of their daughters.
Yes, correct.
One of the sisters of the woman who was kidnapped and her husband. Oh, okay, gotcha. I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't go around showing my crazy to any more people than I absolutely have to, but I get it, yeah.
And I think her point is they were super close. She probably thinks if he had been as ill as he came across in court, she would have seen some signs. I get that. But at the same time, she's not, as far as I know, a nurse. She's not.
Well, and I guess the question that I would have to ask is, are they hanging out like every weekend? Like, were they that kind of close, or were they like holidays kind of close? Because I think that would probably be a little bit more telling. Like, if you're really hanging out like all the time, then I feel like that's a more credible kind of, but not knowing, that makes it hard.
Oh, and she didn't say that. All she basically said was that every time his execution gets stayed, it just drags the tragedy on for her family, and that her whole family is ready for him to be put to death. But we know not her whole family, because Sonia just said she didn't think.
Yeah, well, again, she's emotionally involved, but I get what she's saying, and
I do too.
You know that this one's hard all the way around.
I do too. And another sister, Minnie, says the same thing. He was not as crazy as the courts say he is, and that he knew exactly what he was doing when he killed her parents. Sonia spoke out in 1999, like we said, but what I found out later was that she actually hand-filed a petition in 1992 after it happened, saying that Scott should not be tried for the murders because he was suffering from delusions at the time of the murders.
And that was Minnie?
That was Sonia. That was
Sonia. Wow.
The one he kidnapped.
Wow.
And the one who saw him kill her parents filed a petition the same year that they died.
That's crazy.
Saying that he shouldn't. So you have two sisters saying, oh, he's not as crazy as they're saying. But you have the one who lived with him
and knew him the best
saying, going to the court and filing a petition that he shouldn't be tried. I could not find any more updates about, obviously, they stayed his execution in 2014, but I couldn't find, like, a new execution date. Even just to determine that he was still alive, I actually had to go onto the Texas Department of Justice website and, like, search through the death row inmates to see if he was still incarcerated or if he was had been executed, and he is still incarcerated.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
Website blows,
by the way. Poor choice of words. Our Department of Corrections website?
Yeah, I couldn't, like, put it in any order, so I...
Our government website suck ass.
Yeah.
Finding anything there is, like...
It was ridiculous, but yeah. I was able to confirm that he is still currently on death row.
Well, I'm impressed with you for being able to do that.
So there you have it.
Oh, so that's it, man. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sorry I went off on my tangents and rants and shit, but yeah, that's a hard case, because
how, like, was he allowed? That's
I think that's the biggest thing, because had the judge just said, look, even if you're competent to stand trial, you are not competent to represent yourself. If he had just said that one thing and let the trial play, then it could have been one of those, yeah, we probably shouldn't have, well, maybe he was crazy, too crazy, maybe he wasn't. We could debate that. But we wouldn't be sitting here going, the way that he was convicted and how everything played out was a farce and a circus. And it never should have happened.
And
if he went through the appeals process, which I'm assuming he did, because they usually wait till your appeals run out before they start with the execution. I don't know, but how he could make it all the way through the appeals process and it still not come up or be recognized that, you know, I don't know.
Well, and
or maybe we're just idiots and we're just playing into his game. I don't know.
Which, you know, I mean, I guess it's possible. You want to end with the red wine?
Oh, yeah. We still have another wine to try. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, sorry, guys. That was a little... today's been a weird episode, but, you know, that was a... You know, I always get passionate on these kind of cases. But yeah, we're going to end with the 2018 Millstone Red Wine. So this has Barbera at 48%, Cabernet Sauvignon at 28%, Malbec, ooh, I love Malbec, at 12%, and Merlot at 8%. I do like on the blends when they put, if they're going to put Merlot in, they keep it at the lowest percentage. I'm less of a Merlot drinker. I love, absolutely love Malbec. It's delicious. All right. So let's pop it.
All right. Let's see if you can make it as loud as the last time.
I'm going to do my best.
Oh, that was louder.
I felt like that was really good. Yeah. I successed.
You did
success. I mucho successed. You are welcome. I make success.
You're no longer from South Beach and from Italy now?
You missed that off mic joke. Okay. So, cheers.
Cheers.
Ooh, I like that, but it's very bold.
It is really bold.
It's very bold. A little oaky. I'm not entirely sure that. Did you like it?
Yeah, I'm not a huge red wine fan, but
I was about to say that seems to me that that's more of a. It doesn't seem like it's in your ballpark of red.
There's not a lot of reds that are.
No, there's not, but there's some. But yeah, no, I actually I like reds, and I actually like that quite a bit. It is very, it has very nice bold flavor to it.
It's a sophisticated wine. I'm not a sophisticated wine drinker.
It is. It really is. But no, that's amazing. So yeah, we definitely want to give a big shout out to the Slate Mill Wine Collective.
Yes.
And thank them. The wine is amazing.
It's very good.
We're going to have to go out to the Hill Country and check it out. How we've lived here this long and not done that is beyond me. So we'll just take the kayaks and make a weekend out of it.
And kayak through the winery.
Fuck yeah. Slate Mill, we know you don't care if we kayak through your winery. It's fine. It's fine. We'll have a good time. So anyway, that being said, we want to thank all of you for joining us yet again. Obviously, as we talk about in every fucking episode, because we have to sell ourselves like corporate bitches, you can follow us on all the things.
Go buy some merch.
We got the merch on the website. We are actually trying to redo the website because we built it and then didn't keep up with it. So we're working on that.
We need new merch ideas too.
True. If you have any ideas, you can always hit us up at info@bloodandbarrels.com. And then please, because we have to be corporate bitches, go rate, subscribe, review, do all those things on Apple
Podcast?
It's Apple. Yeah, you're right. I keep wanting to say iTunes because I'm old as fuck. But yeah. Yeah. What was it the kids said? They're like, oh yeah, I'm not on Facebook because I'm not 40. And I'm like, bitch, I'm not 40 yet either. Shut up. I'm like, you about to get your ass whooped.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, that being said, we love you guys. We will check you next time.
We love you all.
Yeah, we do. Laters. Thank you for joining us here at Blood and Barrels. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Blood and Barrels. You can also follow us on Twitter at Blood Barrels Pod.
Follow us on all the things.
You can also listen to Blood and Barrels on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Stitcher, or most anywhere where you enjoy your podcast.
If you enjoy listening, please head over to Apple Podcast and rate, review, and subscribe. For more information about the show, you can check us out at bloodandbarrels.com.
If you want to help support the show and become a part of the Blood and Barrels family, you can join us on Patreon and get access to additional content. Thank you, and we'll see you next time. And a little bit about this one. It says, this white wine was partially aged in French oak barrels and is fuller bodied. The Viognier grape thrives in the Texas terroir. This is like the third time I've tried to record this part. Trixie McSquenigan kneecap, what are you doing to me? Why? I love you, dog. We're never going to get through this. Oh, my. And a little bit about this wine real quick. It says, this white wine was partially aged in French oak barrels and is fuller bodied. I swear to God. I swear to God. Dog, what are you doing to me? The fourth time. We may have to take her collar off.